The next case is number 014272, Michael Rosenblum against Travel by S.com Limited. Mr. Marlino.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Ken Marlino and I represent the plaintiff below, Michael Rosenblum. This matter comes before this Court on review of a order of dismissal pursuant to Rule 12b-6 compelling arbitration of the underlying lawsuit brought by Mr. Rosenblum. We've identified three issues for this Court, and we believe the District Court erred in three different ways, two of which concern a procedural issue, one of which substantive. With respect to the procedural issues, the District Court compelled arbitration, dismissing this cause without prejudice, pursuant to Rule 12b-6. We submit that the District Court erred in doing so. The complaint that was filed in this case attached an agreement called the Acquisition Agreement. That was an agreement where Mr. Rosenblum agreed to sell his business to the defendant. The lawsuit that was filed sounded in breach of contract and sounded in fraud only related to that agreement. The defendants moved to dismiss the cause under 12b-6 and attached a copy of a different agreement called the Employment Agreement.
Why does it make any difference to your position if the Employment Agreement is considered under this 12b-6 rubric or not? Because I understood you to be arguing that the acquisition agreement in any event is more like an umbrella agreement under which there might be different sub-agreements like the employment agreement, but the overall agreement doesn't have an arbitration clause. So don't we need to look at the employment agreement to see if it's incorporated in the way that in other words, to get the full record, to this full story rationale that other decisions have used. So why does it matter if we look at the employment agreement?
I certainly think that if the court's perspective, the district court's, was to have a complete picture of all the agreements that were involved here, then the proper way to do it was to rule as if the motion were filed under Rule 56, summary judgment.
But what else would you have introduced that was competent evidence? And by that I don't mean things like, gee, I thought it meant X or Y, because one party's preconception or post-conception of an agreement isn't the kind of thing one would look at. What is there to look at aside from the language of the agreement?
Well, I think if we've pointed out, Your Honor, we believe that the agreement's at best ambiguous as to whether it intends to pull in the employment agreement. That's why we submitted the affidavit to Mr. Rosenblum, because we do feel that is competent evidence as to what the parties intended, which ultimately, if can't be viewed from the discreetly from the language itself, the court under Rule 56 in a summary judgment context would be permitted to evaluate affidavits. We could have taken discovery and found out what the defendants intended, seen documents perhaps that shed light on this particular agreement, because we do feel it's ambiguous because it doesn't specifically identify in the acquisition agreement that the employment agreement is incorporated. So we felt from the procedural posture that it was appropriate for the court to consider the affidavit of Mr. Rosenblum and also the Rule 56 statements of fact that we submitted. Now, the district court's decision is silent as to whether indeed the district court viewed this as 12b-6 or summary judgment. We do know from the ruling, however, that the district court did consider the employment agreement. We simply state that that was error to do so, and if the court was ruling under a Rule 56 context, then the defendant's motion should have been denied. They didn't comply with Local Rule 56.1, and there was no evidence submitted that would counter the affidavit that the plaintiffs submitted. So we think that, and we submit to this court, that the procedural posture is error, and the court should have never reached the merits, given the fact that if it was properly done in terms of Rule 56, by virtue of not filing a Rule 56.1 statement, the defendant's motion should have been denied outright. Now, even if we reach the merit, and that is, even if one considers the employment agreement, we've also submit that the district court erred. It is undisputed in this lawsuit that the acquisition agreement does not contain an arbitration clause. Now, to be sure, federal policy favoring arbitration is strong. We don't doubt that. We agree with that. However, that policy yields to the agreement of the parties. A party under our nation's laws, from the Supreme Court to this very court, has weighed in on, cannot be forced to arbitrate an issue or a dispute that they didn't agree to arbitrate, no matter how strong the policy in favor of arbitration is. We submit that the acquisition agreement's silence on an arbitration clause is compelling evidence of the intent of the parties not to arbitrate disputes related to that clause.
Well, we all understand that unless the employment agreement's arbitration clause bounces up to the acquisition agreement, there's no arbitration agreement, and there's no arbitration without an agreement. I mean, that's clear. I mean, the question is whether the district court's reliance on the integration clause 1.4 said, you know, all the agreements are part of this agreement, or words to that effect, was legal error or not.
I'd be happy to address that, Your Honors. 1.4 is the integration clause. The language of that is specifically what the district court relied on in finding that the acquisition agreement had incorporated into it the employment agreement and the arbitration clause in that agreement. That clause reads, this agreement, together with the other agreements to be delivered pursuant to this agreement, constitute the entire agreement. Nowhere in Section 1.4, the integration clause, does it identify the employment agreement by name as being incorporated therein.
But it's identified elsewhere in the definition section.
It is, Your Honor. It is identified specifically as the employment agreement, capital E, capital A, employment agreement. We believe that had the parties intended to specifically incorporate that in, they could have easily done so, and in fact would have done so. By virtue of the fact that it is not named in 1.4, we submit is evidence that the parties did not intend to so incorporate the employment agreement into the acquisition agreement.
Are the other agreements that are supposedly incorporated into the acquisition agreement also agreements between the parties Travel by Us and Mr. Rosenblum?
They sound more in schedules.
But what I'm getting at is you have made the point that the employment agreement is between different parties, right? Between Muffin and Mr. Rosenblum, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So my question is, are the 1.4 agreements agreements among a variety of parties, A and B, B and C, A and C, et cetera, or are they all agreements between Travel by Us and Mr. Rosenblum?
I think that based on the contract itself, we don't know that, because I believe that use of the word agreement in 1.4 in the lowercase context, if one were to look at section 1.9, in 1.8, which deal with the schedule, there's a consistency there.
Well, but the term party is a defined party in your
defined term
in your definition section. Party is defined to mean Travel by Us and the seller, and party means any one of them, and the seller means Michael Rosenblum. So if you go over to 1.4, then you have the entire agreement between the parties. That would presumably mean between the parties as defined.
I would agree with that, Your Honor, but that doesn't say in 1.4 that the other agreements and documents to be delivered are only between, by and between the parties. And in fact, if I can direct your attention to 1.8, that is disclosure. In that section, which is right above the schedules and talks about the schedules, it lists the same type of words in lowercase, agreement and document, or other thing disclosed in any schedule. I submit that that is evidence that the word agreement and document in 1.4 is referring to the schedules themselves, which indeed are defined as an integral part of the agreement. And it certainly flows logically that if something's an integral part of the agreement, that it's intended to be incorporated into it, even though it's not put in the four corners of the agreement. And I think it's significant that when one defines the employment agreement in this particular contract, there is no such clause that says it is an integral part of the agreement. Certainly, if it were, one would expect to see it so defined, and one would expect to see it in the incorporation clause itself. It is not as though these parties didn't have the ability and the know-how to arbitrate when they wanted to. When they wanted to in the employment agreement, they did so. Their failure to do so here is specific evidence of an intent not to arbitrate disputes under this agreement. See, my time is up. If the court has any questions, I would be happy. Otherwise, I will yield to Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Berlino. You do have a little bit of time left for rebuttal. That light means there's 1 minute to go.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Miller.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Matt Miller. Together with Mr. Rich Prendergast, I represent the defendants in this case. The plaintiff in this case has characterized it as a three-issue appeal. In actuality, there's a single issue here, and that issue is whether the district court properly dismissed this case pursuant to the broad arbitration clause in the employment agreement.
I have a question for you, Mr. Miller. Is it your position that virtually everything in the acquisition agreement is subject to arbitration?
Any dispute between Mr. Rosenblum and Travel by Us under the acquisition agreement, yes, would be subject to the arbitration clause.
Then how do you reconcile that with Section 11.3 of the acquisition agreement, which is entitled Injunctive Relief, and which gives Travel by Us the right to go to court to get an injunction? Why would Travel by Us have the right to go to court if everything is subject to arbitration?
I don't believe Section 11.3 is specific to where Travel by Us would go for the injunctive relief.
Well, it says, in addition to and not in lieu of any other rights, Travel by Us shall have the right to obtain injunctive relief to restrain any breach and to have such provisions specifically enforced by such provisions, meaning the breach of the covenants, specifically enforced by any court of competent jurisdiction. So the word court is actually used in 11.3.
I stand corrected that it does reference court. The only reconciliation that I can bring to that is when you look at the employment agreement and the arbitration clause, it does provide an out. And except as otherwise provided, all disputes should be arbitrated.
But see, what this suggests to me, you know, there are two scenarios. Scenario one, there's an umbrella agreement, like, let's say, a general contract to build a building, and then there are lots of subsidiary agreements underneath it. If the arbitration clause is in the general umbrella agreement, then it's logical to think that all these disputes that come up under the subsidiary agreements are also arbitrable. That's like the joint venture case that's cited in the brief that Judge Williams decided when she was on the district court. Another possibility is the umbrella agreement has no umbrella arbitration clause, and there are, let's say, four sub-agreements, two of which have arbitration clauses in them, two of which don't. One would think, in that instance, you arbitrate the agreements, the sub-agreements with arbitration clause, you don't arbitrate the ones that don't, and you don't have some general arbitration agreement. That looks much more like this pattern to me, especially when you go back to the definitional point that I was discussing earlier about 1.3, where the employment agreement is not an agreement between the parties as defined in the acquisition agreement.
That's correct, but if you look at the recital page in the employment agreement, page D36 of our appendix, the employment agreement is expressly made a term of the acquisition agreement.
It's a term, but it's not part of the entire agreement integration clause of 1.4. It's an agreement alongside of it. You know, it's a defined term also in the acquisition agreement. There's a page over here, D004 of your appendix.
Correct.
Means the employment agreement to be executed by the seller and the target, as opposed to the language you have in 1.4. It strikes me that the district court may have overreached in pulling up out of the specific employment agreement an arbitration clause that may work perfectly well for that agreement and assuming that it somehow permeated all the rest of the agreements.
Well, respectfully, it's our belief that the district court was correct.
Well, sure it is, but I'm telling you that there's language in the agreements that you need to deal with.
Well, the reason why we think that and how we deal with the language is these two agreements just cannot be separated. The employment agreement with the specific term of the acquisition agreement, the parties agreed as part of this acquisition, the plaintiff would continue his employment on the same terms and conditions as prior to the acquisition.
But these are two separate agreements, and the acquisition agreement is huge dollars, and this employment agreement is just peanuts, really.
I don't think they can be separated, Your Honor. The employment agreement is not only a term on its face, but on the face of the acquisition agreement. In two separate places, it's made a condition of the acquisition agreement. For the plaintiff to prove his breach of contract case here, he's going to have to prove that he satisfied all obligations required of him, all his terms under the acquisition agreement. He's alleged that in paragraph 11 of his complaint.
Well, do you agree you'd be in a lot better position here if the acquisition agreement itself referred to arbitration of disputes under the employment, under the acquisition agreement?
It would certainly be a more clear position, but I think the result would be the same.
Who drafted this document?
That's a question that goes to the merits that the district court never addressed. I know Mr. Rosenblum submitted an affidavit to that effect, but that affidavit was never considered. We never responded to it precisely because it wasn't properly before the district court. The affidavit was submitted in response to our submission of the employment agreement. But the employment agreement was properly...
That's why he says it should have been a Rule 56 summary judgment.
But under Rule 12b-6, when read together with the permissive pleading rules of Rule 10, in the decisions of the district court and of this court, a defendant is entitled to submit documents outside the pleadings when they're pertinent documents that are referred to either directly or by inference in the complaint. That's what the employment agreement here was. It gave the complete picture. I see that my time, I believe, is expiring. Unless there are any further questions, I just ask that the order of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Merlino, you have a single minute.
Your Honors, I'd like to address the main case that the district court relied upon, because it's a much different situation than what is presented here. The district court relied on primarily the Nemro case, and that was the Northern District of Illinois case. The problem with reliance on Nemro is it's a much different situation. In that case, the agreement that contained the arbitration clause was actually annexed to, attached to, the main agreement. There was a specific incorporation clause in the main agreement that said everything attached hereto becomes a part of this agreement. And for that reason, I think that court was correct in determining that there was a specific intent by the parties to incorporate the two agreements. So we would ask this court to reverse the district court, remand this case for trial. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Indeed, our thanks both to Mr. Merlino and to Mr. Miller. And we will take the case under advisement.